The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have a couple of specialists from a local company called ActionNet. And what I thought I'd do is, instead of this big theoretical from 10,000 feet, from 40,000 feet, I thought we'd bring a couple people in the studio who are in the trenches, who get their knuckles bloodied every day and get in fights and have to work these things out and talk about managing clouds and managing what's going on with the real people who are listening to the show. We have Mike Abel, who is an IT service manager, service delivery manager, and Kate Russell, who is an IT service delivery manager for a company called ActionNet. Good morning. How are you two doing?
Hey, John.
Very well,
doing
John.
Well.
Good morning.
Well, I kind of set you guys up as being world-famous experts, so we have to defend it a little bit. So, Kate, tell us about your background first. You have a wide range of background. Boston, New Zealand, everything, huh?
Yeah, I feel 100 years old some days.
My age.
Yeah. So I've been in this business for just shy of 6 years, actually. Prior to this, I was in an entirely different world, but not totally unrelated, actually. I was in the medical world. I was a clinical practitioner for a while. I moved to sales and marketing, but from a customer delivery perspective, that's been the common thread throughout my career. Whatever country I've lived in, whatever industry I've worked in, service delivery, customer service delivery has been a focal point of my career.
Bachelor's degree, MBA, years of experience outside the United States, inside the United States. So you got a good perspective on these problems, don't you?
I hope so.
Whoa, you better.
Yeah.
And Mike, your background, please.
Hey, John. So I started taking computers apart as soon as I found my first one. I remember getting one when I was about 8 years old and opening it up and messing with it and having a grand old time learning about programming and changing things around in DOS and writing up batch files, and that just kept on going. I learned a lot, and actually my first job in tech was selling computers for a company called Circuit City, which isn't around anymore, and then studied it, did my undergraduate work at University of Notre Dame, my grad work over at Georgetown University, and have been working in IT pretty much my whole career, starting at the help desk, working my way up to some IT management jobs, and right now just focused on IT service delivery, which to me is all about taking care of the customer and bringing people together to solve some IT problems.
So real good practical knowledge, maybe some theoretical knowledge in here too, some education. Mm-hmm. This is a good background for my listeners. So many of my listeners in situations where they're trying to move to the cloud. They've got all these people waltzing into their office with mobile devices. They've got all kinds of information to manage. They got people pushing them to do this. They got big data. They got this. They have hard to hire people. Their budget's being pulled back. So they got all kinds of troubles. So I thought what we'd do is we bring up a couple topics, talk about maybe data centers, talk about managing data centers and security, and go back and forth and give maybe some people some insight on really some of the nuts and bolts behind doing it. Now, Mike, your company works with a wide range of agencies. ActionNet, tell us about ActionNet.
So I've been working with ActionNet for about 4 months now, just started back actually in April, and Kate has been with us for a little bit longer as well. She's got a real good background on it. But ActionNet is an excellent company. It's been around for 18 years, started by Ashley Chen, and we're all about innovation and integration and working with our federal clients to solve their issues, working with them in terms of soup to nuts for whatever it is that they're agency might need. So we're taking care of things like the service desk. We're making sure that when a customer needs something, we're taking care of them. We're providing them with their equipment, and we're taking it through the different aspects as well. So we have data centers that are going to be hosting a lot of the different tools that they have and the different products, you know, Exchange, messaging, working away from there. Then we're also working on the security side, the program management side, and what Kate and I specifically do, focusing on service delivery, which is all about making sure that the customer gets what they need and is being focused on so that we ensure that the people who are making the changes and are doing all this development architecture are keeping in mind what the end user experience is going to be.
So Kate, you're almost bridging the gap between software developers, project managers, and the data center and the actual end user. You're the bridge.
That's exactly what it is. I was actually just talking to Mike about that this morning. It's our responsibility to understand the technology enough that we can converse with the engineers and those nerdy guys behind the keyboard and equally converse and understand the needs of the customer, the mission of each customer, and why and how the IT that they use to and that we provide to them supports that mission. It's important that we understand the business need and the technological needs and be able to exactly be that bridge to make those two groups come together in a way that supports the customer.
So, Mike, what I did for show prep is I went to the Twitter feed for ActionNet, and I looked at the last 6 months' tweets. Where aren't you? I mean, I see stuff from Hawaii. I see stuff here. I see Japan. I mean, you guys are everywhere. I mean, this isn't just a local I thought it was just like a small service group in Vienna. I mean, pick a country, pick a town all over the world, aren't you?
No, it's a really nice growth pattern that we've had over the past 18 years. And that was one of the things that actually attracted me to it. Ashley Chen started the company and had just a single contract over Department of Transportation and has grown, yes, into this large scale company, which is all over the place. You know, I work here specifically in Germantown, Maryland. We have people all over the Washington, D.C. metro area. But I mean, Kate, you can mention that there's all sorts of different other areas, too.
So we have offices in Baltimore supporting healthcare contracts. We have offices in Hawaii, in Guam, in Texas, in New Orleans. We are expanding exponentially. And the thing I like about the, obviously growth is important for us as a business, but we maintain a small business dynamic or feel when we are working with our customers. We are extremely close to our customers. We work on the customer sites. We don't sit in big fancy offices off customer sites. It's important for us to be engaged moment to moment, day to day with our customers.
So my question for you, Mike, is a serious question for the hour, is how long before you convince them they should transfer you to Hawaii? No. You got to transfer me to Hawaii. Oh, yeah. Next week. Now we know your plan, buddy. We got your plan.
You got me.
Try to do something. So kind of a humble, small company, 18, 19 years ago, just one woman trying to, make people happy. And apparently it seems to work for many years, attract people, both you attract this company. So it's an interesting company. Is that what I see is that the company doesn't really brag about all its certifications and all these letters and numbers and ITIL and everything else. They brag about their people and making their customers happy. I mean, this seems to be the formula for success, whether it's Chick-fil-A or whether it's ActionNet.
I agree with you. I like to tell people who I'm interviewing for positions at ActionNet, if I'm if I'm the hiring manager, that I bleed ActionNet red. Red's one of our primary colors in our marketing. But I tell them that because it's true. I'm extremely loyal to the company. I've been with the company almost 6 years. Internal growth is opportunities are always there for everyone. The CEO takes part in significant amounts of community involvement. We're listed in the Washington Post for the last 4 years, top 15 companies to work for in the area. And that speaks volumes about the core values of our company and how they look after us as employees and how they look after their customers.
So, Mike, I went to your LinkedIn profile and I looked at Kate's as well. Kind of interesting. The three top categories for you as far as skills are management, IT management, and data center. And her top three skills are management, leadership, and project management. Mm. That's a powerful team.
Absolutely.
We like to think so.
You should go in the, World Wrestling Federation tag team combination.
Only if I can pick my costume. Nacho Libre.
So far we got Mike moving to Hawaii, and you guys becoming World Wrestling Champion tag team people. Yeah. Well, this interview is going pretty well, I say.
Service delivery duo would be that's amazing.
Right. That's what you do.
I got a lot of internal rage, John.
You show up at DOE, well, you got a problem, Mike and Kate's here.
That's like right.
They run in and we videotape this. This is
not
too bad.
Got my theme music all planned out already. It'll be great.
Well, I'm going to have to bring up a four-letter word. Yes. And the four-letter word is, hold on to your chair, ITIL.
Yes.
Oh, no. FCC is going to go down on this one and yank the show. ITIL. This is a way to scare someone. Well, what about ITIL. So give me a 30-second little, Mike, 30 seconds on what ITIL really tries to accomplish.
ITIL is ITIL. It's the IT Infrastructure Library, and it's all about people and processes and making things easier when it comes to delivering IT services. It's about having some really time-tested and true ways so that you can make sure that you're getting the customer what they need. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's saying, hey, this is what's worked elsewhere. This is what can work for you. Let's make sure that we're working together and providing a service to someone, and here's a good way to do it.
Let's take a break, come back, and when we come back, we'll debate the point whether or not ITIL is the process king. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Mike Abel and Kate Russell, and they are IT service delivery managers for a company called ActionNet. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We have the dynamic duo. We have Mike Abel and Kate Russell. They are IT service delivery managers from a company called ActionNet. And a small woman-owned company, 17, 18 years ago, grew and grew and grew. Now they're everywhere. And what they do is they work with federal agencies to help them enable business transformation. Maybe they call themselves a trusted IT integrator. Is that good? Good word, Kate? A trusted IT integrator?
It's a combination. Integrator is sort of a branded word that we use to put the words innovation and integration together to form the word integrator. And we did that purposefully.
I go to events all the time. I'm going to an event this evening, and I always sit down next to people and say, well, hey, well, where do you work? What do you guys do? So let's say we're at an event tonight, and I sit down next to you, Kate, and I say, well, you know, I work for this agency, ABC Agency, and, you know, we got this little problem here, and maybe it's moving to the cloud. Maybe it's making a transition or a new office. So why should I even consider calling you guys up? How can ActionNet help me?
So just as the word describes integrator, the reason you should call ActionNet is that we do both of those things well. We integrate. We help federal agencies formulate a strategy and a way forward to integrate disparate services that they have. This helps save them money. These are federal mandates that are across federal agencies right now that they have to consolidate their services. They have to outsource their services. They have to find ways to do IT more effectively, more efficiently, and with less money. And that's precisely what we do.
So Mike winds up talking to a customer in a federal agency, and they've got these problems. So you've got to take the problem they have and articulate it to a staff and then be able to implement it in a data center.
Yeah, we have to make sure that we're listening to the customer, that we know exactly what their take on the problem is. And that is, I think, where we do a really good job of being that trusted partner who can be there in the front lines with them, who sees what their issues are, who sees the individual characteristics of each agency. Because while I think all agencies have similar goals and mindsets, there can often be a lot of individual characteristics about them. And if you haven't been down there in the trenches and don't know exactly what their individual characteristics are like, what their complications are, you're not going to be able to really design and implement a solution that's going to work. Because it's not only about providing good tech, it's about winning the hearts and minds of everybody. We got to make sure that they know, hey, this is how your job is going to be made easier by what we're providing for you.
So, Mike, I'm going to give you the Panera question. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Hold on to your chair. Here's the Panera question. So I was at a Panera about a month ago, and there was a guy in there, about a 25-year-old guy, kind of goofy looking, and he started literally screaming at the staff about the whole wheat versus, I don't know, this bread or that, and raised his voice to a level that was uncomfortable.
Wow.
And the staff handled pretty well, and they did everything they could to make the customer happy.
Take care now, of the customer.
So the question to you, Mike, is, so you waltz down into an agency, and they go, here's Mike from ActionNet, and there's emotional situations. It's hard to diffuse them, and so it's all about customer service, but sometimes everything doesn't always go right. So what kind of advice can you give people who are listening to maybe communicate to someone like you problems?
So a lot of my time is spent on that less than 1%. You know, 99.9% of the time, things are going well. We want to applaud that. We want to recognize the good when it happens, but we also need to be continuously improving. I want to talk to those customers who had a bad experience. I want to make sure that we are standardizing as much as possible the customer experience so that they're getting what they expect and what they want. You know, I always like to make the McDonald's analogy. You know, you've had a Big Mac before. You ordered a Big Mac. You know what a Big Mac is. You can go to any McDonald's in the world and pretty much get the same Big Mac and know what it is that you're going to do. I want to do the same thing on IT service delivery. I want all my customers who are in the same agency to be able to know what it is that they can get, how they're going to get it, and what the process is going to be like. Because yes, anytime you deviate from that, anytime you order one thing and get something else, it's going to be frustrating for you, and that's what's going to happen.
So, Kate, I'm going to give you a question about a guy from Indiana.
Okay.
His name is Jay Bear. He lives and works in Bloomington, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book called Hug Your Haters.
Yeah.
And he talks about...
What a cool name.
Customer service.
Mm. Yeah.
And he says that 1% that Mike just talked about, he said, you got to go out and you got to embrace and warmly encounter those people, because and he talks about big companies, Delta, IBM, Toyota, Ford, and talk about... Because that is going to be a very vocal 1 or 2%.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting what he says is many people complain, they just want to complain. They don't have a problem. This is a challenge, isn't it?
It certainly is. I think anyone who does the kind of work that Mike Abel and I do, and I would venture to say those out there in the listening world, you have to be a bit Teflon coated in this industry. But you've got to be... patient. You've got to be willing to listen at level one, something that I call listening at level one, not formulating your thoughts before you're allowing that customer to express their needs, their frustrations. You really have to make a commitment to listen and uncover customer needs. What is it that they're usually behind every complaint? There's a need associated with that that isn't being satisfied. And you've got to have the ability to listen, those professional advocacy skills that allow for you to kind of let the frustration wash over you so that you can see through to the real problem and then help them find a solution.
Because what Jay Bear says, Mike, is he says, you know, just because this Pete Fenorchi is complaining in Boston, that doesn't mean that there's a Terry Combs in Phoenix that has the same problem that's not complaining. And if you can go to the problem, person who's complaining, and solve that problem, it may be able to help your implementation for the next person. Hmm?
People who complain like that are often advocates for a group that might not be complaining, might have a similar problem, but just don't have the time, the inclination, or even the confidence that if they say something, anything's going to happen. So you absolutely have to listen to people like that, because they've got great things to say. And I applaud and I hope that if there's ever a problem, you know, I want people to come to me. I want to make things better.
I'd add if that to Mike's comments that sometimes people are indifferent. They are just going ahead with conducting business the way that they do, not realizing that there might be a better way to do business, a more efficient, less expensive way to do business. And that's what we look to uncover, too. We call that helping a customer understand their needs that they may not know they have. And we work with them to find better ways of doing things. This really promotes our customers. You know, they then are put in a position where they can tout, look what I did. I improved in my division. I created these efficiencies with the help of ActionNet. So,
I think one of the things that we're able to do is not only listen to those needs, find out what it is that are problems and how we can solve them, but then take our expertise a level above that. Okay, here's what we've done elsewhere. Here's where some best practices that you might not have thought about can come into play. Here's where we can assess those needs that you haven't even thought about yet, because that's when you're really making some progress. You're not only taking care of what it is that they have in terms of a problem right in front of them, you're addressing a need that they didn't even know they had.
So, Kate, your LinkedIn profile says you know a little Japanese.
I do.
Good, good. I am reading a biography of a guy named Hirohito, written by a guy named Herbert Bix, B-I-X. And what I've noticed is that the way things are phrased in Japanese may not make a whole lot of sense in English, but they know what they're communicating, but they're communicating in a different set of words than we would use to communicate the same idea.
Mm.
I think it's the same thing in English. I think if you get a list of requirements, and if someone's sitting in an agency like transportation, and they say, I want 1, 2, and 3, these list of requirements may be interpreted in a different way by different people. And that's the real challenge of the communication, isn't it?
Yeah. So one of the skill sets in this professional advocacy that we cling to at ActionNet is our ability to build a clear, complete mutual understanding with our customers. So if you think about those words, what does that cover? That means we get all of the requirements rather than just partial requirements. That requires very important listening skills. That they're complete in that each requirement is fully spelled out with the customer, and that it's mutual, that we have repeated back and we've worked with the customer and had dialogue to say, this is how we understand what you're asking of us. Have we got that right? And I think that's the best way to go about making sure that we're delivering what they're asking for.
Let's take a little break and come back. We'll talk more about this concept of advocacy. And I want to draw a parallel with another organization. The parallel of the organization is the Washington Post, and talk about advocacy within the Washington Post, advocacy within different parts of the whole idea of project management and ITIL. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Mike Abel, IT Service Delivery Manager, and Kate Russell, IT Service Delivery Manager from ActionNet. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, the dynamic duo, Mike Abel, Kate Russell. They're both IT Service Delivery Managers from ActionNet. And we're talking about, you know, working with human beings who have requirements for information technology and having contractors come in and just trying to understand some problems and trying to figure out. You know, in the classroom, Mike, it sounds pretty easy, doesn't it? You collect requirements and you produce something X, Y, and Z. Not that easy, though.
Gotten a lot of A's in classrooms that in an actual application, but a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Because, yes, in the classroom, it's all about, all right, tell me what's going to happen. Tell me what your plan is. Tell me what you're going to do. And then you actually have to go out in the real world and actually make it happen. You know, where the boots and the rubber hits the road, that's where things get difficult.
And this time of year, it's as hard as scheduling a meeting. Well, Mike's on vacation. He comes back. Kate's on vacation. He comes back. John's out. Blah, blah, blah. And then just some of the details sometimes get in the way of some of these lofty ambitions. You know?
Execution is the key when it comes to these things, because plans always look great, but you have to make sure that you know your customer, that you are there with them, and that you're working through and quickly responding to whatever changes and challenges that actually occur.
When I have students in the classroom, many times they want me to be authentic, is the word, and transparent. And I think this younger generation has a detector that goes off for fakes. And I think if you are down at an agency and you sincerely, authentically listen to their problem and understand their emotions and can convey that, that's so much better than the, hey, I'm John, I'm the greatest.
Oh, yeah. I think from a vendor perspective, you know, the used car salesman mentality is or should be long gone these days. You have to be committed to this type of work. You have to be committed to genuinely wanting to help customers. You have to know what their missions are. What they're responsible for, and why the service and support that you're providing them is tied in, how it's tied to that, and why it's important to them.
Yeah, I've known Mike for several years now, and on his business card, it doesn't say "fake it till you make it." It's no, go face to face and then solve the problem.
That
should be on your business card.
There's typically things like that that'll occur, and it's the type of environment where you're going to earn your battle stripes and you're going to earn the credibility by being there with the customer. You know, I remember specifically working with an agency a couple years back when I was just starting with them. And it was all about, we have a problem right now. Something broke. I believe it was a day or two before Christmas. We got to get it fixed. And as some people are looking to go on vacation and some people are looking to get out the door, I'm sitting there working in a data center with my federal colleagues late into the night, making sure that this issue, which was a couple time zones away, was getting fixed. Because you can't go away. It's got to get up. It's got to work. And you have to really get those reps in to prove your credibility so that you can take those wonderful theoretical plans that you've drawn up and say, yes, I will be here to work with you to get these done and keep it going through execution.
So, Kate, before the break, we touched on this term of advocacy, and I wrote down advocacy. Then the next word I wrote down was ombudsman. I wrote for the Washington Post for 10 years. They have an ombudsman there. And it's kind of an intermediary in Spanish, interlocutor, some kind of an intermediate person who can speak for someone else. And there's a dispute I had with someone there, and I had to take it to the ombudsman. And they, because sometimes it's like, sometimes face-to-face it's too emotional, but if you have that third party there, they can convey and make things less emotional and more practical. So ombudsman, advocate, is that what you have on your business card, Mike?
I think we should. I think it's a unique set of skills because you have to have, you have to be an advocate for the customer, what it is they're trying to do, the strategy, the mission that they're trying to achieve. But you also, and so you have to have that genuine relationship with your customer. You equally have to have that genuine relationship with the people who make that technology happen. They have their own sets of deadlines, limitations, problems, issues to try to get that work done that come up. And so you serve as a liaison on for both sides. You bridge that gap between tech and non-tech, and it's equally important that genuineness is perceived and is there from the customer perspective and their relationship with you, and from the engineering perspective and their relationship with you.
Some of the best agencies I've worked with create a badgeless environment. You know, we're all partners working together for one goal. We've adopted, we've embraced your goal. But it's really easy sometimes to sit somewhere implementing something, say, oh, I'm a contractor, you know, I'm just going to do this work. I'm not going to
necessarily
do it. There's
the word just. I'm just going
to. Exactly. And I have to be a jerk sometimes and say, hey, guys, you know, this is what our customers think, and I'm being an advocate for them. And it's not always going to be the most pleasant thing. You know, I got to push to make sure the same dedication that our customers have to their agency, we have as well. And we're really pushing for it, working for it, and are willing to hold us up to that same high standard, even if we're not right in front of the customers there.
You know, I've mentioned your company several times, and your website is Action, ACTIONET.com. And so let's say Redskins are playing and Kirk Cousins is throwing touchdowns, and they go to your website. And so give me an example of something good they can get from that website. What's maybe a white paper or something they can pull down from the website that'll help make their lives easier?
Right. So if you go to the actionnet.com website and you go to the how do we do it section, you can look at some case studies of some of the work that we've done for some of our customers. One particular case study is under our ActionNet Mobility capability, and it is a capability on replacement mobile device management. We had a customer who felt like they were stuck with a certain mobile device management product and service that was not working for them. We worked with them to really recognize the needs, the shifting needs that had occurred for them, and replace their mobile device management technology with something that was far more efficient, effective, and works for them.
Makes sense, because everyone's got people waltzing around with mobile devices, and who knows what? Google's back in the glass game, another IP device, IoT this, IoT medical. Oh, medical devices, that's really problematic. I don't even understand half things going on here. Hmm. So, Mike, I had a guy in the studio last week, a guy named Nick Psaki, P-S-A-K-I, and he works for a company called Pure Storage. We didn't talk about terabytes. We talked about petabytes and yottabytes and Mike bytes and Kate bytes and ActionNet bytes and John bytes. How do you even keep track? What do you do to keep up with all these crazy terms?
You've got to love it, John. You have to eat and breathe it all day
all
long.
The time. Yottabyte, zettabyte. Give me a break a bite.
So I love mobile devices because it connects me to everything else that's going on, and it almost is a continuous symbiotic relationship in terms of feeding me information, whether it's CNET or some of the other websites that are out there. I love connecting and finding out what's going on. I'm a big fan of all the different collaborative groups we have. My LinkedIn group is always continuing. I'm also looking out on Reddit and all the different other tech pages that are out there, talking to people who are doing things. And then I'm a firm believer in, you know, the youth will lead you. So I try to talk to as many young people as I can to see what's coming down the pike. You know, talk to people that I know in colleges, high schools, even find out what is it? Where is it that we're going? I mean, they say that you never want to be, you know, you want to be in a room with people smarter than you. I also want to be in a room young with people younger than me, because those people know what's going on, what's coming, and it forces me to continuously learn new things.
So, Kate, what advice can you give our listeners for just keeping up with all this technology?
Well, I have to admit, I'm constantly and forever in trouble with my husband because I'm a tech junkie. I never wait for my upgrade. I pay full price for all the newest gadgets that come out.
The bleeding edge, we know that.
I can't help it. I can't help it. My curiosity gets to me and I want to have that stuff. I think that you have to have a passion for this, and you have to make time to study what the current and future trends are. There's plenty to look for just by searching for it. You can, you know, obviously the internet is a wealth of information, but I think it's also important to study the customers whom you are providing services for or would like to. I think it's important for you to study their mission. I think it's important for you to study what would enable that mission, right? So it's not just the the strict hardcore searching on future technologies, but how do those future technologies apply to the customers that you are working with?
And then how can
you have
take
to be able to make that connection?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many different techniques out there that can be applied to everything. I've got a good friend of mine who has taken a Raspberry Pi, which is a simple little Unix device for $30 or so, and integrated it into his home brewing capabilities right now. You can have tech for anything and then make it a little bit easier and make it fun.
Now that's practical.
Absolutely.
Sure is.
Yeah, the Raspberry is a device for $30. They're going to give it to
I need to meet that guy.
In the third world. And I think they're dropping the price now to around $10 for
that's
a Raspberry
Pi. Like
device.
Nothing.
So it gets everyone a chance to be in the game.
Yeah.
Technology is available and affordable to anybody these days.
Let's take a break and come back. I think we talk more about crystal ball time, what's going on in the future. I'd like to know some definitions between project management, portfolio management, ITIL. Is it worth it? What about this enterprise architecture? Is it important to study, not important to study? And maybe focus on, I think, the most important lesson for today is listening and how to listen. And both sides have to listen normally in situations where there's large IT projects. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mike Abel, IT Service Delivery Manager, and Kate Russell, IT Service Delivery Manager from ActionNet. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Mike Abel and Kate Russell. They are IT Service Delivery Managers for a company called ActionNet, A-C-T-I-O-N-E-T, ActionNet. All kinds of stories, all kinds of adventures, managing many, many different types of projects. Mike, I could ask you an obvious question. So you got portfolio management, you got project management, comes under this big umbrella called enterprise architecture. So just tell us the difference between portfolio and a project management. Just give us a few seconds on this.
I'm going to throw out my partner, Kate, real quick.
Toss to Kate.
Oh, you threw me under the bus, John.
She has not gotten more than I've learned about this stuff.
So the difference between portfolio management and project management, I believe that was your question. Mm-hmm. Portfolio management is the application of a systemic management of investments, projects, and ongoing sort of operational IT. So it's the management of a portfolio of different activities for an enterprise, some project related, some operationally related, some strategically related, some financially related. Whereas project management itself, pure project management, is exactly what it says, the management of a singular project. It could be something like the implementation of Office 365, Microsoft Office 365, in an environment. It has a start, it has milestones, and it has an end date. It has cost, scope, and budget surrounded. Whereas portfolio management is an ongoing application of sort of strategic management of several activities.
So, Mike, a guy sat in that chair about a month ago named Lou Giglio from F5 Networks, and he was a previous professional football player.
Mm.
I think he's a dork, a really nice guy. And in the studio, he said, hey, John, it's all about the apps. It's all about the apps. And so when you look at project management and old school enterprise architecture, EA, this apps kind of like is a sword, that kind of a Japanese sword that cuts through all the different levels. So is it all about the apps or is it all about the structure or the project management? These are tough questions.
I think the project management is changing a little bit. You know, these days, projects are shorter. They are more geared towards the tactical approach when it comes to what does a specific need actually convey and how are we going to make quick iterative change. You know, we're not doing 18 two-year-long projects that, you know, we're not providing status for on a regular basis. We are doing quick six-month sprints where we're going to be changing something, where we're going to be sharing it with the customer, where we're going to be working a little bit in terms of making progress some chunk at a time, and then moving around, shifting, being very agile with it. I think that people have less of a tolerance for these really, really long projects that are going to take forever. They want to see quick change, and they want to modify as we're going along. And because things move so fast, I think that's just totally essential.
So, Kate, I'm doing a show on DevOps next month, and I'm bringing in a company called Chef. I'm bringing in a company from Excella, and I'm bringing in a guy from Microsoft, and we're going to talk about DevOps and doing the show prep for it. There's a lot of DevOps. There's a DevOps community for Amazon Web Services in town here. There's a DevOps community just for Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that many of these major cloud providers seem to be cutting their own way through this whole idea of project management. Does this affect your job at all?
Oh, it certainly does. We actually happen to be gold partners with Microsoft and with Amazon Web Services.
Oh, that's the right question to ask you then, huh?
So we're big into the Agile concept of development operations, in that, as to Mike's point, customers are looking for a agile, iterative approach to getting products and services into their hot little hands as quickly as possible. Their worlds change. Their missions are changing. They're adjusting to, changing requirements and needs from an IT perspective to complete their mission. So we have to adjust accordingly. It's actually quite fun. It's good to have reach goals in a 2 to 4 week time frame instead of having to wait 6, 8, 10, 12, 18 months for a project to complete. So there's sort of a more of an instant gratification that you're getting with that type of project management methodology.
You know, Mike, back when you were a youngster and taking apart computers in your dad's basement, there was a TV commercial, when people used to watch TV, there's a TV commercial about American Express, American Express card. And the pitch was, why do you have an American Express card? Gives me possibilities. Mm. I don't know if you remember that commercial. Gives me possibilities. I'm trying to apply that to the world of the cloud and data centers and transformation and Azure and Amazon Web Services. And mm-hmm. Azure, Amazon Web Services, move to Bulgaria. I mean, there's all kinds of different things you can do, but, you know, the possibilities are there. And it almost takes some intermediary, interlocutor to figure out, okay, Amazon Web Services is great, Microsoft is great, but for this particular situation, let's keep it in. I mean, it takes someone like you to know that, because not everything is the answer for everything.
Building everything in-house was the traditional approach. We're going to bring in, we're going to put the hardware in here, we're going to make sure that we have it all on site, and that's very comforting. People can see it, people know what's going on. But you're right, these days it's a lot more towards let's utilize the existing resources that Amazon and everyone else has, because we can scale it up.
If it's the right fit.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have to make sure we're pointing in the right direction. We're scaling things up. If demand is increasing, we're providing them with the ability to do things over a short period of time. We know what it is that those type of partners can do and how we can bring them in and help.
So, Kate, let's say little John Gilroy is over at the Department of Justice. And I bring you into my office and I go, yeah, AWS. Yeah, this is the answer. This is the answer. Mm-hmm. And you see some weaknesses in that. This is where some interpersonal skills.
Professional advocacy skills.
This is where, you're advocating mm-hmm. for your customer. But so just because I want to go on vacation to Florida in August, may not be a good idea.
So part of, you know what comes into play, the skills that come into play in a situation like that is, and we're oftentimes faced with a customer who will come and say, I want this, let's get this done. We have the responsibility to that customer to, one, try to discover why it is they're asking for what they're asking for. There's a reason behind it. They think that what they're asking for can solve their problem. They think that it is the magic bullet to solve the issues. And we're the subject matter experts for them. They have us there for a reason. So we work through dialogue with them to try to find out, tell us what it is you want. Okay, so, and you think this particular product or service can solve that problem. Let me help you to understand why it can partially solve the problem, but there may be a better solution out there for you. And as your advocate, it's my job to help you see that.
Walking on eggshells, you got to be very careful, huh, Mike?
You certainly do.
This is because some of these organizations, I was at the AWS show. Well, I want to do AWS for everything. It can wash my car, it can drive me to work, I can do this. But it may not be the answer for everything.
It's not. And you can easily get wrapped up in that idea of, yes, I'm going to do everything here. We're going to do it there. And believing in the sales pitch, just because someone makes it sound easy doesn't necessarily mean it always is. We have to have that commitment to not only at the enterprise architectural level, but at the portfolio level. Say, yep, we're going to integrate this across it. We're going to have the technical wherewithal to do it. We've been there, done that before. And also, we're going to work through all the different bugs and customizations that are inevitably going to come up.
So, Kate, I'm going to put you on the spot here and mm-hmm. give you 30 seconds to tell me exactly what's going to happen in 5 years with the federal move to the cloud.
Okay.
This is a good one, huh?
Sure. Why not?
In 30 seconds.
I'm going to take my crystal ball out again. What I see happening is, in my experience at some of the federal cabinet-level agencies, there's requirements and mandates that are requiring our customers to operate their IT management or their IT portfolios with less money and more efficiently and more effectively. Numerous consolidation efforts are underway within agencies themselves, and there is a move towards actual IT shared services model concepts interagency-wide across agencies. And that's all in an effort to be more efficient, be more effective, and save money. So that's what I see happening. Part of that, too, you know, future crystal ball, I see a lot of outsourcing happening. It's expensive to have contractors and engineers sitting in offices, plugging in hardware, rental space for that office, commuting costs for that. If we can outsource to providers who provide the same type of service, or if customers can outsource, that's less expensive. It's reliable service. So I see federal agencies outsourcing a lot of their IT services. I see a lot of migration to the cloud. I see the collapse of data centers where and when it's possible.
Mike, quick answer for that one. Next 5 years, where you see the whole world of data centers?
I see things getting quicker, faster, and smaller. And a lot of the things that Kate talked about are tied back into the workforce who wants things quicker, who wants it more available 24/7, and who wants to be able to access things on their phones from their couch. So I see a lot of those things that she talked about enabling people to do so, to work from anywhere, to get things very quickly, to make decisions on their phones with, you know, just simple authorizations, with simple data, with charts and graphs and different dashboards that are going to give them up-to-date statuses, and doing so from anywhere without having to wait for things.
Boy, so different from my old world where we'd have green bar and go to work with a suit and tie and evaluate it there. Now people want to sit in their home, get out their smartphone, look at charts, see exactly what's going on in a data center in Denver, and make a decision right there. Mm-hmm. And it's very efficient, very quick, very fast, and mobile.
Absolutely.
Great. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests today, Mike Abel and Kate Russell, IT Service Delivery Managers from ActionNet. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, Managing Partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.